There's a tank game in the middle of this episode that I didn't remember the name of. The game is Combat for the Atari 2600. I just looked it up. The first game I remember coding, however, well, copying from a magazine, was in BASIC. It was Lunar Lander. Learning to code a game, or at least coding in a game from a magazine, is a way that a lot of people get started and excited about programming. Of course, I don't recommend BASIC. Now we've got Python. And one of the game engines available for Python is Pursued PyBear, a project started by Piper Thunstrom. Piper is here today. We talk about Pursued PyBear, we talk about learning to code, and learning CS concepts with game development. Welcome to Test and Code. If you've found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions. And that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate if, especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics. Piper, welcome to Test and Code. I'm super excited to have you on the show. We haven't talked before, so this is kind of an introduction to each other as well.
Yeah, I realize we've been floating around some of the same spaces for a while now and just never seem to have met.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about Piper, who you are.
I tend to give my micro professional bio for stuff like this. You know, senior software engineer. I've been a web developer since 2014. I've done a lot of community organizing, so NYC Python, PyGotham. I'm technically still the organizer of Flask NYC. I really need to find someone to take that over. I moved from New York. I do not live in New York anymore. So being an organizer of a New York meetup, not the most useful thing. I do a bunch of public speaking, which is where most people are going to have known me from. PyGotham, I think I've missed 1 year since 2014. PyTexas, PyOhio a couple of years, PyCascades, PyTennessee. Cool. Eventually, my goal is to hit every major U.S. conference one of these days.
I'd like to do that too. At first, my goal was PyCon, and I have spoken at PyCon a couple times, once in person and once the remote thing we had on 2020. Mm-hmm. PyCascades, I spoke there, and I like the regional stuff. PyCon's a blast, obviously, but the regional stuff's really cool. I'd like to hit more regional things. But I'm gonna have to just buckle down and be okay with doing travel stuff because.
Yeah, it's been good the last couple of years. A lot of them did some kind of remote thing. I think PyTennessee doesn't because they don't record anything. That's their interesting weird thing, which is why I suggest people who okay, you want to speak at a conference but you don't really want your first conference on, go to PyTennessee. Okay. It's great. Good people, they don't record, so you don't have to worry about if you mess up, nobody's gonna remember. PyOhio I think is my favorite of them just because the audience is very, very weird, in a good way. When I say weird, it's because PyOhio is free. My audiences are both older and younger, depending on what year I went.
Okay.
So a much more diverse range of people show up to PyOhio. So if you want weird stuff, that's definitely the place to be. And obviously, PyGotham was my home conference for a bunch of years. So there's all of that.
Well, do you have any upcoming speaking things that you're going to be?
I don't actually. I am unfortunately high risk, so I am still locked down a lot harder than everyone else. And so I'm off the speaking circuit for a while. I really like virtual stuff. There's part of the reason I was oh yeah, I'll totally do a podcast. This is great.
Awesome.
Then the last detail of my career is I'm a game dev. I think that should go without saying, considering we're going to be talking about Pursued PyBear. But I actually, my first job was at a company that we were a little agency, and the Topps trading card apps were actually one of my first projects.
Really?
As an engineer.
Neat.
So yeah, Star Wars Card Trader, you know, made it into USA Today. Like that's been the highlight of my career at this point.
That's pretty cool.
So, and then lots of hobbyist work. So
you said something happened in 2014. Web dev since 2014, is that you said?
Yes, yes. I got my first this agency in 2014.
Okay.
And when I say web dev there, I was mostly writing the backend servers for the app.
Okay.
So yeah.
And then game stuff, has it always been in Python, or have you done other
I've done a little bit outside of Python, but it is primarily Python.
Really?
Okay. In fact, I went to school for a business degree, a management information system, so I could do some like SQL and like understood a little bit of software architecture, but I couldn't code by the end of that degree. And so I actually started learning to code via Python, Pygame, and so on.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes. So I did ask you to come on so we could talk about Pursued PyBear, which is obviously a bad Python pun. Or a good Python pun, depending on your face.
It depends on who you ask.
So tell me about Pursued by PyBear. Yeah. So what's that project about?
So the way I explain it to people is it is an education-focused game engine.
Okay.
And that means a lot of things, and we can go into it in a bit. But basically, the whole goal is things like reducing the actual onboarding complexity to making games. You know, making a window in PPB is about the same as Piglet. So it's import PPB, PPB.run, you have a window. Piglet is very similar. Other things, we are a 2D engine, mostly because trying to teach 3D when you're also trying to learn about games in general is kind of a pain.
Okay, yeah.
We are sprite based, which has sprite is a terribly overloaded term. basically, it means both the 2D images that are animated and also the object that is the thing that gets displayed on screen. One of the things that we did is we have an event system in PPB. Due to requests from actual educators, it is an implicit subscription model. So basically you name your event handlers the right thing and PPB will find them for you.
Oh, okay.
And then, the other thing that we've really focused on is, PPB is an extremely flexible backend architecture. If you don't like our renderer, you can tear it out and build your own. and it does not affect the engine at all.
Hmm. All right.
So yeah, this is the, like what we pitch, what we actually care about.
So is the intent okay? So just I haven't done any game development in Python, but I think it's a neat idea because I hate to be cliche, but it's cliche. Like one of the first things I ever did was copy a game listing out of a magazine so that I could play a game on my home computer. it was like a Radio Shack computer, like many years ago. But that's what I did. And so I didn't know anything about game engines or anything. It was a big basic loop. But gaming has gotten better. But that's a lot of people get into coding is they want to write games, right? And is that the idea about this is to try to teach people coding and game or mostly just teaching about game development?
So that's an interesting question because... basically, long history of the project here. When I started it, it was actually, I was building it mostly to minimize how much boilerplate I was writing for Pygame, is actually how this all started.
Okay.
And then I'm friends with educators. So one of my partners is a college professor. I have friends who teach middle grades. And I try to go to like the education summit on a regular basis. For example. And so basically they looked at what I was building and went, okay, there are some good ideas here that would make it easier for us to like use this to teach coding or game development are the two big ones. And so it's kind of a little bit of both.
Okay. So did you started the project?
I did.
Okay.
I did not know that. I am the author.
Okay. Neat. But there's a whole bunch of, there's a lot of contributors on this.
Yes. That is, It's funny because I get asked, how do you get so many contributors? And, like, for the most part, it's I show up at conferences, I run sprints, and I ask people, like, hey, if you're interested in doing game dev, come talk to me. I will totally help you through your first contribution.
Okay, so that since you, it sounds like you did come from Pygame first. And so is it easier to get started with Pursued PyBear than with Pygame? I know that that's opinionated, probably coming from you.
Yes. But... yeah, I like to think so. Okay. And actually, like, this is, basically, I think that there's some significant differences between, like, Pygame and PPB in terms of, like, game-making tools. And you kind of see this, it's my own classification. Like, this is not, like, if you go looking for these words, you're not going to find them. But, I tend to refer to them as, you got two kinds of engines, frameworks. I don't really make a distinction between those two anymore. But basically, in game development, there are two major ways to think about the game making tool you're using. And one is these opinionated kind of all-in-one experiences, and PPB is definitely in that camp, versus what I refer to as the pile of primitives method.
Oh, yeah.
And that's Pygame is the pile of primitives. It's here's a bunch of things that you can put together however you like to make your game. Whereas PPB, while we do give a lot of those kinds of, like, here's a, you know, we have a number of things that are just free in PPB that you actually have to build and buy game. But, like, you kind of have to follow our model within a certain degree. It's really the way the different components talk to each other is, like, the only truth in PPB. Like I said, you can rip out almost anything and... like, throw in new stuff as long as you follow the way different components talk to each other.
Okay.
Yeah, so, like, our flexible backend gives us a lot of control. That whole ability to rip things out, because we used to be Pygame-based. Like, I was just... it was this slightly nicer API on top of Pygame is what I started as. And then a handful of years ago, we actually switched over to PySDL2.
Okay.
Partially to get PySDL2 sooner than Pygame's release. And then our maintenance schedule doesn't match up with Pygame's, and so that caused a little bit of friction on our side, so we decided to make the change. And that actually only took us, that was one release cycle, to go from a Pygame-based system to a PySDL2-based system.
Okay, what's PyDS by PySDL?
So PySDL is, I'm trying to remember which, I think it's a CFFI wrapper around the Simple Direct Media Layer library.
Okay.
Which is actually the same library that Pygame is based on.
Okay, got it.
So it's just, it's Python bindings to that, and then we actually use, in PPB, we actually work with the maintainer of PySDL DLL, which is basically a wheel version of the SDL binaries.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So we don't, where Pygame actually gets to package theirs, actually, last I looked, they were still packaging theirs. I don't know if they still are, but ours is actually, we have a dependency on this, which lets us, like, we don't have to manage it. We don't have to make sure our build system can support it. Pretty much all of PPB's code is pure Python at this point. Though there are some C types if you get down into the squirrely stuff.
Okay. Well, so what do you use it for now? Do you use it to make games?
Yes. That is actually the primary thing I do with it, is make games at this point. I'm in the middle of a game jam right now, experimenting with a top-down shooter with some kind of odd mechanics, actually.
Okay. And are there example games built on PPB that people can play?
So we have a handful of examples, like, in the repo. So if you go to GitHub/PPB/PursuedByBear, we try to keep a handful of examples just always there. But then I've actually published a handful of my projects on itch.io. And so, like, right now I've got, like, the most of them available. For obvious reasons, I'm the one who has to, like, dog food it the most, so...
Okay.
But yeah, no, I've got games that I have published using PPB. built on top of I actually use Briefcase as my packaging tool.
Okay.
Which honestly, compared to the fighting I used to do with Pi Installer, I am much happier with Briefcase.
Okay, and Briefcase is the what it's part of.
Beware.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Yep. It is the Beware freeze tool. And it is. It solves a lot of issues that we used to have with publishing Python games. So
cool. So you mentioned talking to educators. So are some people using this in conjunction with like courses or classes or something?
Not yet. Okay. So the two people that I have closest are basically one just needs to find time to write curriculum. And then the other one doesn't have time to write a new curriculum and basically needs someone to do it for them. But like it's definitely been on the list of a handful of educators who are like, I would love to use this. I just like need time, need space, need, which like as the maintainer of the project, I totally understand. I can't fault them for that.
Yeah, exactly. I can't imagine the life of a teacher. Well, cool. So it looks like, if people were trying to choose between like Pygame or PPB, you know, well, you mentioned that, Pygame's more of a handful of stuff. You kind of have to, is the code bigger then? Is my code going to be bigger with, one versus the other or?
It's kind of, once you get to a certain complexity, they kind of wash out. Okay. But the at one time I was going to build like a business card that had basically the pbb.run, like just open a window and then the equivalent Pygame on the back of like what it would take to get to that point.
Yeah.
And it's if I'm willing to drop some of the niceties that we have put into PPB over the years, it was two lines of code in PPB to like 19 or 20 in Pygame. And again, that's pulling out a couple of niceties,
okay.
Like just the raw being able to open a window and also close it when someone hits the X, like that alone, there's a lot more you have to write in Pygame for that.
Yeah.
And like Pygame Zero has kind of solved this in a couple of other projects, like that we all kind of recognize that that's not okay.
Okay.
And I'm not like, this is not me faulting Pygame. I want to be clear. Like the pile of primitives totally works. It's just, there is enough boilerplate that, like, let's call attention to it.
Yeah. Well, so you do game development now. Did you get into coding from game development, or did you get there some other way?
It's a little of both. I mentioned I was I went to school for MIS, so Management Information Systems, mostly, you know, how you turn data into information kind of stuff. And I did my college. Everyone had to do an intro to programming course that was actually VB Basic, or VB Net when I was going, which unfortunately, where I am now, where I've like talked to people about teaching programming and things like this, and like, yeah, that course was bad. I was not taught arrays, and I was not taught subroutines, which is the VBNet name for functions. I had to go off book for both of them.
Okay.
So, like, I do not consider that programming course that I walked out of that knowing how to program. I did some SQL programming. I did a little tiny bit of, like, network engineering.
Okay.
But, like, walking out, it was more I kind of have some concepts. I couldn't code out of a paper bag if you asked me to.
Well, so what brought you to games?
So that's, I have been doing some kind of game design or development for pretty much as long as I could remember. Like some of my school projects were like, I built a board game for a book report one time.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So games have always been one of those things that has been interesting to me. And then, it was a very natural fit to go from that into really learning to program. And actually, like, I don't think I would have even gone that far if, like, I hadn't graduated in, like, 2012 and the economy was still in shambles. And so, like, basically, I was looking at jobs that would use my degree, and they're like, yeah, you need 5 years of experience, and also you need to know how to program. And I'm like, I can only fix one of those. So I went to teach myself how to program. It was one of those... I got lucky, because at the time, Pygame was the... Like, if you went on Reddit and went, I want to learn how to program, like, our programming was like, just learn Python. It's going to be your best bet. And so I got lucky, picked that up. Started learning Python, picked up a couple of books, the important one being Inventing Games with Python and Pygame from Al Schwiegert. Went through that book, and then, like, so I graduated in December. I wrote my first game from, like, my own ideas. I was just going to make the game myself, no tutorials. That was February. And it's basically been... like nonstop since. Like, I make a game, then I'll build a website, then I'll do this next thing. Did some freelancing as a web developer, which is how I got into like the stuff that I did when I started my career. And unfortunately, game dev doesn't pay as much, which is why I ended up on the web dev side.
Really? I didn't know that.
I actually saw a joke on Twitter a couple of months ago that was basically web dev is where game devs who don't have the will to do it go. And it's not wrong. It's web dev, we use a lot of the things I learn in game dev actually do apply to like web development.
Okay.
So it actually is a pretty good fit. If like you're not sure what to do with your interest in games, like web dev isn't bad.
Well, there's sprites in both.
Well, it's a whole combination of things, even like because from like your data design has to like the data design constraints are different across the two, but like how your data is modeled matters in both cases. How you access it, and yeah, if you go to front end, like all of that graphics programming comes in handy as well. So like,
yeah, well then there's event. The event and learning about event systems and stuff. And
interestingly enough, part of the reason PPB is event driven is so that you can actually jump from it into an event driven system. So like you can get used to it in, you know, the nice safe Python world and then like go do JavaScript.
I guess I forget there's non-event based programming since I've been doing event systems forever. So
yeah.
Anyway, cool. What's the future of Pursuit PyBear that you'd like to see?
So right now we're kind of, I'm actually working on a feature. Our last release is actually being held up because I want to get this feature done. Basically text in PPB has been kind of painful. So I have been designing a thing that makes it less painful to like put text on a screen where you want it. But beyond that, my actual next like true focus is I would like to see some kind of curriculum made for it that can just be drop-in. And unfortunately, I am not actually a teacher.
Play on
so
TV.
It's yeah, pretty much. like I do a lot of education, but I am not like, I don't necessarily know the things that go into making a lesson plan for a classroom, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I can build tutorials. I can write, tutorials. I give them, but like what is needed for a classroom setting, I don't have that skill set.
Okay.
So it's either I need to learn how to do this or I need to like find enough money to pay someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah, or try to convince somebody. So anybody listening that would like to put together a possible starter curriculum or even a first draft of one, that'd be cool.
Yes, I would. And I am happy to answer every question about that.
So I've got a question about teaching somebody new to coding. If I wanted to try to get somebody like say one of my kids to start coding, and I thought, you know, coding a game with them might be fun. what kind of a game would be a good target? Because there's a lot of like tutorials on like Asteroids, but I don't know if Asteroids is the right way to go or something else.
So you're not, let's see, let me, there feels like there's two parts to this question.
Okay.
So Asteroids is actually not a terrible first shot, especially because of some of the things that PvP actually packages its own vector class, so you don't actually have to teach all of the vector math. You can literally just, like, if I subtract, you know, my position or their position from my position, I'm going to get that direction, and I know I can, like, send something along that line and it'll work.
Okay.
So we have that where, like, you get to speak in, like, basic mathematical principles, even though it is matrix multiplication under the hood. It's a 2D vector, so like small matrices, but you know.
Yeah.
We don't actually do so PBB can't do like vector drawing. That's just not a thing we support right now. So you can't get like an exact Asteroids duplicate. But if you replace the ship with a sprite and so on, like you can get a pretty close guesstimation.
Okay, so I'm not I'm not actually drawing all the elements, but if I had like sprites of them or something, I could do.
Yep.
I could do an Asteroids within this game.
Yep. And it actually would not be terribly difficult to set up. Things that we don't support. You are going to have to figure out your own collision detection, mostly because we've gone back and forth on how. Primarily, I find like there's that combination of doing, especially like square to square collision detection, is a fairly simple algorithm, and it's a really good way to teach like complex comparisons.
Okay.
And so it's one of those like we could totally add this, and it would make like certain people's lives easier. But like it is absolutely one of those things that like. Learning to implement it is actually a fairly useful lesson.
Okay.
So that's one of the things we don't do. Other than that, I really like what I call top-down shooters. So not Asteroids, which has its like the physics element, but more direct control. So WASD movement, aim towards the mouse, press a button to shoot bullets kind of thing. So Robotron... is a really good example of what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Which, like, I laugh when I use that example because I realize it is one that is aging and it's even before my time, but I actually like Robotron, so...
I don't know if I've ever played it.
It was, I want to say 70s arcade game.
Okay.
Maybe 80s. But yeah, no, it was... one of the twin stick shooters of the era.
Okay.
And so, yeah, the nice thing about those style of shooters, though, is that you've got the one character you need to worry about, moving it around, collision detection with the bullets, collision detection between the enemies and the player. But then it's just, like, once you get those three elements together, like, you can add as much as you want to it.
Well, there was a game that I played when I had like an old Atari or something that was like a tank that you drove around and tried to shoot other tanks. Is that is that a top down shooter then?
So yes, that game is a top down shooter, but it uses what we refer to as tank controls, which is left and right actually rotate your character.
Yeah.
And so that's closer to like Asteroids in control scheme. The control style I'm talking about, you would actually, like, if you hit left, your character moves left on the screen.
Okay. Got it.
And so, like, that's the subtle difference there, but yeah, they're kind of all in the same genre. And again, it's, I like them because the number of things that you actually have to implement to start playing with it is, it's only two or three things. And then it's just about, like, how do you assemble those things and make them work? So yeah, those are, like, what I like. Obviously, platformers are very popular. I've not actually built a platformer ever. I'm not a fan of the genre, and it doesn't have any, like, drive, but it is a very popular one.
What's a platformer? Like a original Mario Brothers or something?
Right. Okay. Right, yeah. So, and there's a genre split there between, like, 2D and 3D platformers, but, like, let's not go into that one.
One of my favorites when I was a kid was Dig Dug. Can you do something like that? Any ideas?
I would have to think about it a bit. Because if I remember right, Dig Dug's, the way it deformed the map when you were using it was much more precise than full sprites. But you absolutely could build a version of it.
Now I'm totally getting nostalgia for some of those old games that I played, and I want to like play old games now.
Oh, yeah. And these old, like, honestly, those old arcade games are like, those perform very well in PPB because they are not, there's not a lot of complexity to them. You've kind of got your idea of like what your game space is.
Okay. Well, okay. So now I got a call to action to everybody listening. If you've got a favorite, especially if it's Python based, I'd love to see if the source code's available, especially even if it's not, I guess that's okay. But I'd love to see some examples of some simple games that people have built that are actually kind of fun to play. They don't have to be great. They could just be kind of fun to play. That's fine. I mean, that's the thing. When we were a kid, it was this or go outside and, you know, try to burn stuff with a magnifying glass or something. But since I grew up way before the internet, there wasn't a lot to do during the summer.
I will share this with you now.
Okay. Awesome.
And hopefully we can share this in the future. But so this is actually a game that I built. It's called Shooter Game. Like, this is a tech demo is what it is. But if you remember Galaga, it's essentially a not quite as dynamic Galaga.
This looks all great. Written,
the entire tool chain is Python. Everything. It's great. And then I can actually give you the source code. Unfortunately, the source code on this does not have the packaging around it. This is much simpler to read than if it were just the briefcase version that is on itch.io. But so there, you also can have the source code.
Thanks. Why I'm talking about this is because I learned to code not by learning how to code. Around the same time, I did take a class in BASIC at school, but I didn't quite internalize it. But one of the things that I think that we've lost is a lot of people learn stuff by just trying to go way faster than they can and just try it. So like, for instance, the thing I typed in with my TRS-80 was a lunar lander game. Mm-hmm. And it was totally fun as is, but I tried to understand it. I'm like, okay, well, how do I make the ship go faster? So I tried to like understand what part of the code made the ship go faster. And then like, what happens if I, make the landing pads wider? How could I do that? And how could I, you know, make the, the thrust work better and change gravity and things like that. Mm-hmm. And actually that was a decent game to try to understand, you know, the event loop, like things changed through, you know, every time through it. And then also all the physics of it. It really isn't a physics engine. As far as I can tell, you go through a frame and you draw everything again. I learned all the concepts without knowing the names. So like I wrote functions, but I didn't know it was a function. I wrote for loops, but I didn't know they were for loops. They just were things that worked. I'm curious if anybody's done that sort of thing to actually teach is like, here's a complete program. Now let's talk about it. And maybe that's a terrible way to teach people, but I find that like let's learn like 6 months worth of stuff before you've made anything interesting. That's, I don't know.
Yeah. That is actually, that's one of the things, I really appreciate about what we've managed to do with PPB is, so I've been writing our big mega tutorial. It's not published yet, but basically it's going to build a game of Pong. And I absolutely followed like that mindset of like, build something that works. Like when I teach people to start using PPB, like the very first line of code that I write in PPB, which I don't have to anymore because Briefcase does it for me, but is get a window.
Yeah.
Now put something in that window. Now move that thing around. Like you, just that piecemeal step that you've always got this like next deliverable.
Yeah, I love it. So
and like when I'm designing my own games, like I almost always build a scene that I refer to as the sandbox. And it's basically, this is not like a fixed scene. It is I'm going to just throw things into this and see how they play together. And I don't have to worry about it always being in a working state, because this isn't ever actually going to be in the game. It's just me playing with, like, the concepts that I want to play with.
And one of the things I love about incorporating game development with teaching people how to code and stuff is not to try to get them to be to game developers. It's that it's fun.
Yeah.
And that sense of play, I don't want people to ever lose that. That's kind of why I got into podcasting and writing and everything, is to try to encourage everybody to keep that sense of play alive for everything they do within coding. Because, like, let's you know, just be honest, there's a lot of jobs in the world that are way less fun than tinkering with a computer.
Yep.
Is there any final call to action or anything you'd like to shout out before we wrap it up?
I mean, so the first important one, if you go to ppb.dev, which is our primary website, there's a link to our Discord channel. You can come join us anytime. We have a very, very open design process. So you come join us in development, and you can talk to the maintainers as we're designing systems. And we do try to take, like, because we are trying to, we're education focused, but we've actually got three identified audiences: students, teachers, and hobbyists.
Okay.
And trying to make all three of those happy is difficult. And the more people we have, like, coming and talking to us, the better we can do to make sure we are hitting all three of those well. Students are actually, I would love, if anyone is an educator and thinks this is an important kind of concept, please come talk to us. We like, you don't have to get involved, just answer questions once in a while is basically all we ask from you. Because our educators are unfortunately the primary proxy for our student population.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, there's 31 people online right now. Like, just as, oh, I just my. Went and looked. That's pretty active.
Cool. It's actually fairly quiet. We basically only talk when there's something to talk about. But yeah, no, we've got lots of members. Like, anytime anyone, if you find something that doesn't feel right, we actually have a channel. What did I call it? It's it did not work. And so basically it's a, come tell us what you were trying to do, what you tried, what happened, and what, like, sometimes they're just bugs, and, like, that happens more often than I care to admit. But, like, every now and then we get, like, I was trying to do this thing, and, like, this felt like the natural way to do it. And, like, we're going to investigate, like, why does that feel natural? Does it feel better than what we're doing? Like, yeah, those spawn a lot of design discussion.
That's interesting. So, yeah.
We like keeping that nice and open. Our bar for contributor is on the floor. if you come to a sprint and you test our getting started docs or our tutorials, like, that's a contribution for us, and we will actually, like, help you set up the, like, contributor entry for that task.
Well, that's hugely helpful. I love it when people just say, hey, there's, like, a link broken on your README. Yeah. I'm like, thanks. I mean, because I don't read the README, so I'm not going to find it. So,
yep.
That's awesome.
Documentation is mostly my purview at this point, and anyone who is up for helping get through that, because I have to run through it a couple times a year at this point, just because the docs do not always stay up to date to the code. So I make it a project every 6 months or so to, like, sit down and read all of the docs and make sure they're pointing to the right objects and things didn't happen. Nice. It is a painful process. But yeah, no, we volunteers all over. You mentioned earlier, if there's education folks listening who would like to come help build a curriculum, I would love to work with you. Happy to answer questions about the underlying things in the engine, if that's something you need to know, or if you just aren't sure how to make PPB do the thing you need it to do for your lesson, come talk to me. We will figure that out.
Okay. And on, and we'll have your contact information on the show notes, but you're also on Twitter, fairly active there if people want to hit you up there.
Yep. Too,
right?
On Twitter, always happy to chat about any of my open source work. Okay. I've got a blog at piperthunstrom.dev. It's piper.thunstrom.dev, but you can get that from my Twitter when you grab that information. And if you're building a game and aren't sure what you're doing with it, like, feel free to come ask. I actually, because Shooter Game is going to definitely be in the show notes at this point, the way I wrote that is extremely flexible, and if you want to start by modding an existing game, that you can probably get it. I don't actually remember how up to date it is on PBB stuff, so I might need to go and do some. Hey, let's improve the code. At least make sure that it's on, you know, PBB 1.1. Since I actually wrote that, I think it was 0.7.
Okay. And
so it's gotten better, but it's got some cool stuff that I would be happy to show folks. Like, here's what you have to do to, like, add enemy formations or.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks so much for talking with us today. And I hope that we get I'd love to see this in some schools or something, to people teaching, or even just, you know, some anything, any sort of people teaching other people's stuff. It's great.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and one of the things, I didn't bring this up, but I will definitely share with you a link for my PyTexas talk, because I think is kind of the ultimate proof of concept. I live coded for 30 minutes and very little went wrong.
Wow. Congrats.
So, yeah, no, I think my PyTexas talk really shows, like, the maturity level we've hit with PPB. Like, it is absolutely... It's extremely flexible. It's very fast to develop in. Yeah.
I would love to watch that. So cool. Yeah. Send me a link. Well, thanks a lot, Piper. And we will keep in touch and talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to Testing Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, you know, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.